We're here to share with you inspiring stories that bring to life all the little and big ways that people bring more love, joy, laughter, and humanness to everyday life. Our focus is the hunt for those little moments that refuel the human soul and reminds us what life is really all about. I invite you to sit back, enjoy the moments, enjoy the stories, the adventures, and the journeys. Welcome back to another episode of What the World Needs More Of. My name is Jerick Robbins. I am your host for this journey of the soul. We are joined today by two very special guests all the way up north in, did you say it was Alberta, Canada?
Yeah, you bet. Edmonton, Alberta area.
Edmonton, Alberta, staying warm. This is Dean and Marcy Whalen. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Excited
to be on.
Same here. Now we're going to dive straight into the question of the show, which is, what do you believe the world needs more of?
Okay, I'll go first. Okay. Yeah, so many things, but I would say the world needs more of truth, just straight up truth in their life. And I really think that in so many ways that starts with like a whole family. You know, you could say the world needs more families that aren't broken, that you know, have principles and values instilled within them. And so kids grow up with, you know, a sense of their purpose in the world and just getting at that head start. I think so many people just feel behind because they didn't get that proper start. And I mean, we meet people all the time from, you know, really broken, kind of terrible backgrounds. And it's amazing to see how they overcome that, and they, you know, they're inspiring in how they overcome that. But I think if we had more whole families and just more truth being taught, that would change a lot of things.
And I'll just stem off that a little bit as well. So I think, we live in, I mean, we're, you know, down in the US and even in Canada, like we live in a very knowledge rich, but truth poor society. And people, you know, I love a quote that talks about how there's a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to get its clothes on. And so I think I totally agree with Marcy on how foundationally, if we can learn from a young age, truth and success principle and what principles are, and live a principally based life that governs and regulates how we make our decisions, we wouldn't have so many people that go through midlife crises and, you know, just identity crises as time goes on and just not sure who they are, because we, a lot of times we just base, you know, we're basing our worth on what we can do instead of who we actually are, or what we can and can't do instead of who we actually are. And so I think that it really is a big fundamental element of being able to develop a self-image and root some foundational values. And so we're both big believers in that. But I also would say that from my perspective, what came to mind when I heard that question is if more people in the world could be focused on contribution. I think we have a very consumption-based world, and the world by and large is, you know, probably to no fault of most people, but we're kind of trained from a young age. It's like, what can we get? And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, our successes in life is about what we acquire, instead of our significance is about what we can contribute and what we can give back. And, that, you know, and so that's a big thing. And we spent a lot of time talking about that ourselves and discussing that with different people that we're, you know, that we are close with and different platforms we get to speak on. It's just helping people have a contribution mentality that, you know, and that significance mentality, and that success can happen without being significant, but significance can only happen and occur if we're successful first. And so if we can use our success as a platform to then add value to other people and inspire other people, to help them understand that their desperation that's overcome can be other people's inspiration, and really weave together a world community instead of these silos that are all over the place and often competing with each other, instead of sort of complementing and being able to cooperate together and contribute to a core foundational ability to be able to just like, you know, have the world come together through some of the things we're chatting about is a big thing on our heart and something that we like to be able to vocalize to, you know, many different people, that a contribution mentality is always going to trump a consumption mentality when it comes to uniting our communities. And then ultimately when the community gets united, so does the country, so does the continent, so does the world.
Powerful. Very powerful. I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think the element of giving versus taking, I'm a huge proponent of that. And I think it starts with even the closest relationships we have. You know, if you go mm-hmm. to a family member or a friend, or specifically your spouse, to try to get something, if eventually that something runs out for any reason, you're going to have to go somewhere else to find it, whether that's the kids or your work or church or a passion or a hobby or even someone else. And it's like, oh, that's horrible. Versus if you train yourself to go there to give, the only reason it runs out is you stop giving. And the only reason you stop giving is because you stop doing the personal work it takes to actually build it from within every day. And that's a choice.
Totally.
And it's like, wow, totally. That's a game changer. But you're right, because when you once that ripples into your personal relationship, it ripples into your family, it ripples into the community, it ripples into how people approach every business decision and every life decision. It's very powerful. I love these two. So truth, you said truth, success principles, and contribution versus consumption.
Contribution. That's right.
Yeah. A friend of ours says that, our marriage might be the only marriage book our children read, in that what they see modeled every day is their idea of what marriage is. Mm-hmm. And so the more we can model to them and teach them that, Dean's the most important person in my life and I'm the most important person in his life. That's security for them. And then they will grow up, and they won't settle. They will have great relationships in their life.
Mm-hmm. And, a model to see, I talk about this all the time, how a model to see is so much more superior to a motto to say. And so if we can be a model for others as an example, as an archetype, and we learn how to be able I think a lot of people are exhausted in life because they don't exhaust their resources on a daily basis. They're not depleting themselves and contributing, which ultimately fills people back up.
Mm-hmm. I think it's true. Very true. Now here's a question. Let's get to know more about you two. What would you consider to be your wow factor? What makes you uniquely you? And what are some of the moments that help shape it throughout your lifetime?
I would say, it's almost easier to answer for each other. I think what makes Dean uniquely him is he is the most relentless human being I've ever met in my life. He was 6 years old. And so Dean played college basketball. He was the leading scorer in Canada the year he played. And he was very, very accomplished. But it was because when he was 6 years old, he would go out in the rain when it was raining and shoot hoops, because he thought to himself, there's no other 6-year-olds that are shooting right now, so I'm going to get ahead of them by practicing in the rain when it's, cold out and, the water's, pelting into my face. And he thought that as a 6-year-old. And his whole life, he just always had that mentality of just doing what nobody else was willing to do, going that extra step, staying late, coming to the gym early, just very single-minded, very focused. Even when he broke his tibia and his fibia going to dunk in 10th grade. That would set a lot of people, back, and maybe they'd never recover from it, but he was back on the court as soon as possible. And just has always been so incredibly relentless. And it's great and it's not great to live with, because there's just always such high standards in our home. So it's awesome to live with somebody who's like always follows through, It's inspiring, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, oh, I can't get away with anything.
I appreciate that. And it's, I think a lot of times people's self-image is spawned from following through, like making a commitment and following through. And of course, that's a, what Marcy just shared is a typical 6-year-old mentality.
I was like, I was eating dirt when I was six. So no, it was not a typical 6-year-old mentality.
Yeah. But I appreciate what she said there, and that's true. I mean, I am very devoted and, committed and, you know, and I am relentless, for sure. And I would say for Marcy, the word that comes to mind for me is resilient. And she's very resilient. You know, we all take punches in life. And, when I think of, when I talk about this stuff, I often think of the interview from that Mike Tyson had decades ago when he had given, there were two undefeated fighters that were going at it. Mike Tyson, I think Michael Spinks, and, I don't know if you remember that or not, but he was interviewed afterwards and they're like, you know, Michael Spinks had a plan and he's going to defeat you today. And that was the plan, was for him to beat you. And if reporters were talking, you know, about that, and Mike Tyson's response was, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And of course he had put the TH on the end instead of the CE. And you know, and that's the thing, is that we all have these plans so we get punched in the face. And Marcy, I've watched her kind of get punched in the face, and things happen, and obstacles, and different travails and challenges that everybody has, but she gets back up. And I was just recently with one of my mentors is John Maxwell, and I was with him a couple of days back in Beverly Hills, and Barbara Corcoran was a guest, and she's the gal in the Shark Tank, super successful lady, and she's talking about how, you know, when it comes to what she notices with people that are successful, she talked about how the common thread for people that succeed is that they don't wallow in the pit, in their pity, you know, that they choose to have a possibilitarian mentality. They choose to have an I can mentality, and they overcome that situation. It doesn't mean they dismiss it. They allow it to register, but they choose a mentality, which is the only thing they can control is their thoughts. And they choose that mentality to redirect what the upcoming frontiers are going to look like, because they rerouted the mentality around the situation and the challenges and obstacles that they were facing. And she talked about how that common theme that was woven in is that they get back up. They don't feel sorry for themselves. And I think that's I thought of Marcy when I was hearing that, because she's very resilient, and I've had the privilege of having a front row mentality to watch that and watch her develop and watch her grow. And so that'd be how I would describe something that really separates Marcy from most people.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I would just add on, a little story is that I used to be super prideful, and I could almost say arrogant. And I had a number of humbling experiences in my life, but I think what I realized is that having a victim mentality is so selfish, because you're just so consumed on your own problems and your own obstacles and challenges, and you're only just thinking about yourself. And as soon as I realized that there were so many more people out there with far greater problems than I had, and I could just look beyond myself and look at others, it changed everything. It gave me joy. It gave me purpose. It gave me just a real sense of, significance, to be able to say, okay, I'm not going to waste my pain. I think that's the biggest thing, is don't waste your pain. Use your pain to help others. Use your pain for good, so that, you're not just sitting in it forever, which really, it doesn't serve you, and it certainly doesn't serve anyone around you.
Totally. It's like the pain in your journey becomes the power in your testimony for other people. So I think that's great what Marcy just added on.
Can you say that one more time? The pain in your journey.
The pain in your journey is the power in your testimony.
Hmm. And what does that mean for people listening?
I think people just underestimate how the things that they go through, like the refining moments, because I think that pain is character refinement. Hmm. Pain is building us into who we need to be, and it's helping us to get closer to who we're actually meant to be. You know, how does a diamond become a diamond? Heat and pressure. You know, we get these beautiful glittering objects only because they started as a lump of coal that went through extreme heat and extreme pressure to become this amazing, magnificent thing on the other end. And so the pain we have in our life, if people overcome and become through that, I mean, who doesn't love a good overcoming story? It's so powerful. It's inspiring. But when you're in it, you don't think of it that way. You're going, this sucks. I do not like this moment. But when you think about, okay, I'm not going to waste this. I'm going to serve somebody through this pain. And I remember when our first pregnancy was a miscarriage. We miscarried right after we'd told everybody in our life, right about 12 weeks, which is common. It happens. But it was still, I mean, obviously difficult no matter what, but especially so because we had just shared this joyful news and we'd been planning and waiting for this baby. And, you know, I went through a whole slew of emotions and I was depressed. I watched the Back to the Future trilogy like 8 times. I don't remember any of it. I just sat in front of my TV watching Back to the Future over and over again thinking, I don't know how I'm ever going to get off this couch. And I realized, well, I have to get off this couch. What is my alternative? Like, is that really the choice I'm going to give myself, is just to stay here? I have to just, you know, go get groceries, you know, go out the door, do something, you know, one day at a time. And eventually, a couple of months later, I started having a conversation with a woman who was struggling deeply with her miscarriage. And it's amazing. Women don't really talk about it a lot. And I didn't know how many women experience miscarriage, so I went through my own. And I was able to walk her through it and talk to her and just be a safe place for her to walk through her pain. And I thought, I never would have been able to do that if I hadn't gone through that experience. I don't know why I have that experience still to this day, but I'm glad that I can use it to help other women that go through that same experience.
Yeah, I think, Jared, this actually goes back to what I was talking about earlier when it comes to consumption versus contribution. If somebody is centered and kind of focused on contributing, then they look at their pain differently. They look at the testimony differently and they go, man, you know, I don't understand right now why I'm going through this, but in due time, I'll be able to look back and go, that's why I went through that. But a lot of people are, because we're so focused on consuming, which is a present, like it's in the present, it's that sort of mentality versus contributing, which is what's going to be the effects of this contribution in the future. If people can be more focused on that, then they start to look at their pain differently and go, okay, because I'm going through this, this will add value and contribute to others in some way, shape, or form. I just don't know when, but I'm excited to see what that looks like.
It makes so much sense. I like what you said, overcome to become. That ability to be resilient, that ability to be relentless. Powerful, powerful personal attributes that you guys both bring to life so well. Here's a question for you both. What's a moment that made you feel incredibly humble?
Well, we don't have enough time for all of them in my situation. Cause like I was just saying, I was just kind of a punk kid. And, I think for me, the first experience I had that really humbled me is I was 18 and I drove to Mexico on a bus with other 18-year-olds to go build a house for a family. And just the trip down there, was crazy, going from, you know, driving from San Diego, basically across the border, one of the richest neighborhoods, probably in the States, into one of the poorest areas that I'd ever been to in my life. And seeing how so many people live. And that was my first taste of it. And then as I began to read and do research, I realized that billions of people live this way. And I, just spent 5 days there. We camped, on a dirt road, just outside of a slum, and our shower was a milk jug of water at the end of each day, because we worked 12-hour days building this house, mixing concrete by hand, and learning how to do it at the same time. I didn't know how to build a house, but I did by the end of it. And it was very modest. I mean, for most people in America, it would be like their garage. That was basically the size of this home for this family of four. And the most humbling moment was on the last day. We knew this family probably lived off of $1 a day or less. And as we were finishing up, we were just, you know, kind of having a little bit of a celebration and a party. And this family came out and they were carrying a plate of food, and it had 2 hot dogs and some fries on it. And there were probably 20 or 25 of us that were working on this house. probably 15 to 20 of us. And they brought out this little plate of food. And I thought, this family just spent whatever money they had for the week to feed us. And it wasn't going to feed all of us. I mean, it was, we all had a couple bites, right? And we made sure to eat all of it because we knew the sacrifice required to give us that. And it was just, they were trying to show us how grateful they were and how, sorry, I don't want to get emotional, but they were trying to show us how grateful they were for this, you know, small act that I felt it was such a small sacrifice for them that was going to change their life. This new concrete strong house, no longer in this, you know, little shanty slum made of tin and cardboard. And they came out and probably didn't eat for the whole week so that they could give us this little plate of food to say thank you. And I came back from that trip no longer arrogant or prideful. I came back very humbled and thought, I'm not going to live my life for myself anymore. I'm going to live it for other people so that I can continue to do things like that so people can live better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great story. And you know, that was before Marcy and I knew each other. And I've heard Marcy share that before. And you know, when I think about, from my perspective, you know, what kind of story comes to mind? And we went to Africa 3 years ago, and we were there to for a few different reasons. We support an orphanage that's over there, and we also went there for a couple other objectives as well. But yeah, we spent some time with the people that were, you know, that don't have anything material. Wise, like materially, they don't have anything, but they sure have a lot. They're sure rich in their spirit, and in their relationships. And you know, it's interesting to see kind of the mentality that I think a lot of people in the third world have, that was certainly present when we were over there, which is that their community and how tight knit they are. Like, they're, and someone had said this to us, and it stayed with me, is that they're willing to be. So many people that live where we were over in Africa, that they'll be generous with their space. You know, they don't have much space, but they're willing to share it because they're so relationship focused. But they won't be very generous with information. Whereas, you know, in kind of contravention to that, over in North America, we are not generous with our space. We want our space, but we'll be more kind of generous with information. So it's interesting to see that kind of contrast, that they'll give the clothes off their back, even though they won't really have much, for their fellow man. And, you know, that was certainly a humbling moment for me. That whole trip when we were over there was very humbling, to see what it looks like to not be wealthy in material, but to be wealthy, not be wealthy in riches, but to be wealthy in the enrichment of relationships. And I'll never forget that. And I want to continue to be reminded of that. And then kind of more in a day-to-day, like giving you a day-to-day answer, I am humbled every day, because I think if someone is in pursuit of being better, and they're in pursuit of becoming the best version of themselves, it's like the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And I think anybody who takes that approach to life is going to be humbled every day, and it's going to, you know, I often talk about how if the current version of ourselves becomes the final product, that I think we screwed up, but you know, that we should be transcending and growing and developing on a day-to-day basis. And what happens to us today determines how far we go tomorrow. And so on a day-to-day basis in my life, I would say humility is woven in, because of the approach we choose to take when it comes to how we live our life and how we, you know, just go about our day-to-day routines and our philosophy around things.
I love it. I love it. And I'll throw in a side note here. What's interesting is I had a similar experience on my first trip around the world, going to India, Africa, China, Vietnam, Thailand, all these different places, Central and South America, mm-hmm. where you find people who live in such a challenging moment of their life, and in circumstances that make being homeless in the U.S. look kind of pleasant. I remember coming home and being pissed at the homeless people here, because I'm like, do you know how much opportunity is around you? Like, there's so many resources. Yeah. Like, a drinking fountain in a park that has water that won't kill you doesn't exist in so many parts of the world.
Yeah.
And it just seems so weird to me that people didn't take advantage of it because they didn't know the difference. What I also found was, and I was studying psychology when I was traveling the world, in every village and like in the villages, not in the cities, cities are booming in Africa. The cities are booming in Mexico and all over the world. But in the villages and the rural farms and the people who were still, you know, in the developing parts of those nations, there's a different value system, but I found all personalities still exist. They just do it with the resources available. I remember one of my friends I made when I was living in a village over in Uganda, he was totally significance driven in a great way. And he was so proud of the fact that his cousin had a car. And he's like, dude, my cousin has a car. He can drive us anywhere we want to go. And he was so proud of it. I was like, dang. this guy's proud of that car. There was another person who I remember when I got sick really bad, I got told I had 6 days left to live. And this dude showed up out of nowhere when I was lying on the ground, sweating, like vertigo, couldn't see straight, delirious. And he just sat there and brought me a bucket of water and like kept putting a cool wash rag on my head for like 3 days. And I remember being like, dude, this guy's an angel. Like, it was someone in the village that, regardless of his circumstance, and his mom had a house literally full of orphans that she had collected of people whose parents died and they had nowhere to go, and she just kind of brought them to her house. And so he had, like, 12 orphans living at his house with his mom, and this dude would just show up out of nowhere and, like, make sure I was okay when I was literally at my worst health-wise in that position. And I was like, wow, like, one dude's so proud he has a car, or his cousin has a car, and the other dude, like, he's just showing up out of nowhere to help. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that everywhere you go, this values exist everywhere. Like, some people are there to help. Some people are there to get theirs. Some people are there to be special. Some people are there. And so regardless, you know, for people who are listening all over, really, it might be a good time to ask yourself, what's most important to you? Is it giving? Is it getting? Mm-hmm. Is it being someone who, like you guys said, overcomes to become someone of significance in your community by helping those people around you? Is it someone that you guys said who becomes relentless to never give up on what you're going after, or resilient to always stand up no matter how many times life punches you in the face? And to cultivate a lot of what you're hearing here and apply it to your situation, regardless of your situation, regardless if you're listening from, you know, a village in East Africa or, you know, the 100 and whatever floor in Hong Kong of your business you own, like, regardless of where you're listening to, make sure you take this stuff and apply it because it matters everywhere. It's so important. I just want to throw that side note in for everyone who's listening here.
Yeah, love it.
Here's my next one. What's an awe-inspiring moment that you've had over the years?
Well, I have to go with the birth of our children. There's nothing more awe-inspiring than life. And our last little one was born on our bedroom floor, and Dean like caught her, I guess is the best way to say it.
Was that planned?
The two of us. It was planned. Oh, okay, yeah, it was planned. It wasn't like, hey, Dean, we're having this baby right now. No, it was planned. It was just the two of us and our midwife, and our other girls were kind of in and out. Just to experience like life and to see that little baby come out, and it's incredibly like I don't know if there's anything more awe-inspiring than being able to witness new life.
Yeah, I call it a touchdown moment. Closest thing I'll ever close I'll ever get to being a football player.
Catching the baby.
But I was thinking the same thing as Marcy when you asked that question, and so that's what immediately came to my mind. But just recently, like last week when I was with John Maxwell, I've always find it awe-inspiring for somebody to communicate a conversation, a revelatory conversation, or to walk us through an interaction or a moment in time that their perspective of it. And so, it was pretty awe-inspiring for me to listen to John when he was talking to, and him to kind of recount his discussion with his friend, Bill Hybels, who runs the Global Leadership Summit. And, you know, some people, I'm sure a lot of people know kind of what happened in the last few months there. And Bill stepped down from, running the Global Leadership Summit for various reasons. I don't need to get into that, but But what John, his account for his discussion with his friend on how he was in his friend's corner, regardless and despite the situation. And one of the things that John had said that I found just so potent and so palpable is he said, we deserve the credit for what we've done right, even when we do wrong. And to hear him walk everybody through in that intimate setting, his discussion with his friend Bill, to me, I find that very awe-inspiring to see how relationships transcend everything and everything. John always talked about, that everything rises and falls on leadership, but leadership rises and falls on relationships. The world rises and falls on relationships. And so not just a recent thing that I found, it kind of caught me and froze me in that moment as I was listening to him share that story. And so I thought I'd add that in as well.
That's very special. We deserve credit for what we've done right, even when we've done wrong. I think it's true. I think currently what's going on in the U.S. for people who are listening from around the world who might not know, we're at a stage where people, I guess being called out would be one way to say it. And sometimes it's accurate and true and sometimes it's not. But what's happening is someone might get called out for something by someone else in public. And then what will happen is no matter the circumstance, all of a sudden everything they've done right seems to just be wiped away. And now they're this evil human being. And I think right. that statement's powerful to say, sure. I long time ago in my life, I used to believe everyone you meet is an example or a warning, one or the other. And as I grew up and evolved a little, I started to realize everyone is an example and a warning.
Yeah, they're both.
Hang out with them long enough and you'll realize they're an example somewhere in their life of something beautiful you should emulate and do more of in your own life. And if you hang out with them long enough, you'll figure out they're a warning somewhere in their life of what not to do. And it's just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And I like what you're saying here, which is just because we all have the parts of us that are a bit of a warning doesn't mean we're still not an example somewhere. I used to sit down with homeless people and buy them lunch, and I'd listen for where is this person a beautiful example. I remember one time I bought a guy 4 tacos from a place called Rubio's in San Diego, and he ate 2, and then he looked at me and he said, do you mind if I just take these to go? And I was like, not at all. Like, it's your food. I do whatever you want. I said, but why do you need to take them to go? Aren't you hungry? And he goes, I've had enough, but I have a friend in the park who, man, he would love these. Mm-hmm. And I just look at this guy. I'm like, he's homeless and obviously hungry. And he decided to take just enough, just what he needed, and then take the other 2 and go share them. And I remember writing in my journal that night, I'm like, that's a really important, beautiful lesson. Take what you need and share the rest with someone else you know who would benefit from it. I think that's a beautiful life lesson. And I learned this from a homeless guy who was sleeping, outside under a bush a couple blocks down from my house. And I was like, obviously, I wouldn't call him an example if it comes to business, but I would call him a great example when it comes to contribution and being a great human.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
And
there's so many awe-inspiring moments in life if you think about it. Just like, it's a miracle we're alive. Like, I can't, just that... creation is amazing, like life. There's so many things to be grateful for. And that's what if more people focus on that, just on the absolute miracle of being able to breathe, wake up, having another day. Even if it's in tough circumstances, you have the power to do something about it. You have another day to make a difference, to improve, to get better, to make a change, to help someone. I feel like that question could be so many moments, so many things.
Yeah. And I'm a big believer in the Bruce Lee model and a lot of people know about that. It's just like he looked at each and every discipline of martial arts, including like boxing and wrestling and everything. And he extracted what is useful. He discarded what is useless and creating the perfect fighting form and not necessarily anything geared towards self-defense or sport or tournament or rank or any of that stuff. But it's like we look around and we can see what we can take, like you were saying, Jarek, like what is the example here that we can take that can make us better, that we can be a conduit and be able to take that learning lesson and be a conduit and become better for the people that we come into contact with and that we have exchanges with in the future.
So true. So true. Little twist here. What's your greatest fear?
You know, I would probably say my greatest fear is having the second death, what I call the second death of life. And I think, I mean, everybody has their first death, which is literally what it is. But most people have their second death as well, which is what I call when people stop saying our name. First death is when we stop saying our own name. Second death is when everybody else stops saying our name. And so I'm afraid of not making a contribution big enough that lives beyond my life. And so I guess the summation of that would be, I would rather go through the fears of what I need to go through to make a consummate contribution, the greatest contribution I can make, while I'm here. Because I'm a big believer that your destiny is what you do while you're here, and your legacy is how you're remembered for what you did when you were here once you're gone. And so I'm very fearful, and probably have been for the last 10 years. My greatest all-encompassing fear would be that, is that, and I'm more afraid of not doing what I need to do while I'm here, than I am the discomfort of what needs to happen while I'm on this planet. And that is what used to be my biggest fear, is discomfort, is the possible embarrassment if something goes wrong, which, when my fear became something larger and more overarching, those fears sort of, they kind of just, they went away, those temporal ones. And so that'd be a big thing, just not being able to leave a legacy, not being able to contribute in a way that warrants, kind of being remembered for something more than just we exist. I existed. You know, I want to be leave some sort of lasting impression.
Yeah, that's great. I try not to live in this fear because it could be debilitating, but I would say that if anything came to mind, it would just be the fear of losing my family, my kids and my husband. Like, that's just a very legit, real fear that I try to, live in my faith, and I don't go there in my mind. But there's a C.S. Lewis quote that I love that I think kind of sums it up, is that God allows us to feel the fragility of human love so that we'll appreciate the strength of His. And I just have to come back to that ultimately, yes, human relationships are fragile, and frail, and anything could happen at any moment, at any time. But ultimately, we have to find our strength in God and just go to the source so that we don't live in fear all the time.
Yeah, that's great.
Powerful. Powerful. What are you guys most excited about for your future?
I think, so I'll go first. For me, I'm most excited to see a couple of things. Number one, my kids grow up, who they pick to marry, what they do with their lives. I'm so excited to see them hopefully grow up into amazing little human beings that, honor and love God and walk in righteousness and truth and are examples to the people around them. And I'm also excited to see, and I guess I'm choosing to be hopeful and optimistic for our country and for your country in particular, because we're neighbors, that we become more unified and more, I guess, yeah, just more unified in our values and our principles, and less divisive and less, polarized. I believe that can happen in the future. I know there's a lot of divisiveness and polarization right now, but I'm excited to see that change. I'm excited to see people embrace community and relationships more and choose love. Just choose to act in a way that is more, I think, beneficial for all of us together. To just, yeah, to still remain what I believe to be one of the greatest places in the world to live, in Canada or the United States, and to really be a nation that people can say is a unified place, not a divided one.
Mm-hmm. yeah, what came to my mind when you asked that question was family. And you know, we're privileged to be, we have a lot of freedom. We've been able to arrange and situations and kind of a lifestyle where we're free and have been able to be full-time husband and wife and full-time parents. And so the biggest thing for me that I thought of when you asked that question was continuing to build and instill values in our children and raise our kids the way we want them to be raised and not have to subcontract them out to the world's influences. And you know, for us to be able to be the number one source of influence in their life. And so very excited to continue to form and mold our kids in the way we want to see them go and continue to create adults in the making, you know, adults that are going through childhood and really empower them to be an instrument for good as they get older and be on the theme of contribution. Once again, be contributing members to our communities in ways that transcend what we ever did.
Yeah, our communities, like, and yeah, I would even say globally, like I was just talking about our countries, but globally, like I'm excited to, as a family, be able to make an impact globally, wherever that might take us or lead us. But yeah, we have big, big goals, big vision for what's possible.
I love it. Now, we just have a few minutes left, so we're going to transition to the second part of the show that we call Nuts and Bolts. This is the tactical, tangible, practical, applicable stuff that someone could immediately apply, like many of the things you've already shared. And so there's three questions here. Number one is, where do you focus the majority of your thoughts and time and life each day? Number two is, what is the key to your success in that? And number three is, what is one actionable tip to help others achieve and experience the kind of success in their life that you've experienced in your life?
Okay. That's good. Those are great questions. So the first one, where do we spend most of our thoughts, time, energy?
Yep.
On each other, on our family. And just making those relationships the tightest. When we're tight as a unit, we just feel, you know, we can take on anything. Mm-hmm. And for us, you know, it's the Bible. That's our success book. That's our principle book. That's what we try to walk out and live out. So it's pretty simple in that way. What was the second question, Jarek?
What is a key to your success in all this?
Yeah, I think a big thing, like what Marcy's chatting about, is that we've, you know, when you're much more effective in tackling the world that's without. Like outside of ourselves, when we've got the world within kind of stabilized, like inside the home, and if there's no battles going on inside the house, then we can be more effective when we're outside the house. And so I think, you know, one of the biggest things is that if we're continuing to manage our thoughts, which we can control our thoughts. We can't control our circumstances around us, but we can control our thoughts. So if we manage our thoughts, we can manage our world. And so that's the biggest thing, is that not allowing our thoughts to accidentally form, but continually make sure that we are the author of our thoughts, which means we will then be the author of our destiny.
I love that. Go ahead.
Also, I was just going to say, you know, just practically, because that's what you're asking about, just you need systems in your life to be effective. I mean, we have three really busy kids. We're planning to have more. You need to have systems. You need to be organized. And if you think you're ever going to be effective in your day without systems and organization, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah. You do not rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems. We are big believers in that. And so I totally agree with what Marcy just said.
Powerful, powerful. And our final question, what is one actionable tip that can help others listening achieve and experience the kind of success in their life that you've experienced in yours?
Be mindful of who you allow to influence you. Influence management is a big deal. We focus so much on time management and money management, and there's validity to it. I just find those are much easier to focus on when we focus on managing our influences. Our input, our influences becomes our thoughts, which becomes our words, which becomes our actions, our habits, develops our character, at least our destiny, our legacy. So the end game is on the line by by who we allow to influence us. And so influence management, just be aware of, the people that we allow to speak into our lives and those that are closest to us, and monitoring that and making sure it's in alignment with our overarching vision and our goal for our life.
100%. And I would say, just to quickly add on, I believe how you start your day is so crucial. Like, how you start your day goes your day. If you start your day hitting the snooze button in resistance to the very first seconds and moments of waking, basically you're telling the world and you're telling yourself, I don't want to get up. I am starting this day in resistance. So never hit your snooze button. Start your day with a really solid routine. And I know we don't have time to get into specific steps necessarily, but just starting your day with focus and intention, because I think you will be so much better served for the rest of your day if you start it with gratitude and welcoming your morning instead of, hitting the snooze button multiple times and rushing and then just always feeling behind. That just has been so key for me as a mom, getting up before my kids, having some time for myself, starting my day right, so that I can be happy and excited to see them when they wake up, not going, let's go, and like being a frantic lady for the whole day. So that has been everything for me, just for all the mamas out there.
I love it. It's powerful. So powerful. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you for both of you sharing so much with us. I know everyone who's listening is going to love this interview and be very grateful to hear so much wealth of knowledge shared with them. So we appreciate you both being here.
Well, thank you. And thanks for doing what you do, Jarek. I love your goal with this podcast and your mission and what you're trying to accomplish. I think it's awesome.
Thanks for having us on, Jarek. We really appreciate it.
Of course. And if people want to reach out to you or connect with you online, where's the best place they could do it?
Just on Instagram. We share an account, actually. We do everything together. Mm-hmm. it's just Gina Marcy Whalen. You can find us on Instagram.
Okay.
And our family branded website, deanandmarcywhalen.com, is a great place to reach us and reach out. And deanandmarcywhalen.com, as well as Instagram.
Perfect. So I'll make sure both your Instagram handle and website are in the show notes. So if you're looking for that, make sure to go to the show notes on this episode, click the links, it'll take you right to them. And for everyone who's tuning in, if you know someone who needs to listen to this episode, we believe is sharing is caring. We like caring people around here, so make sure you share. And I look forward to seeing you all next episode.